April 14th, 2021. We're in Masechet Sanhedrin and Daf Chaf Vav Amud Bet. We're going to rewind just a little bit. Of course, we're in the middle of several statements in terms of additional people who transgressed or did something wrong, whether they're validated or invalidated, Pesulim or Ksherim for Eidut. Let's go back these 13 lines and Dayanut. They get coupled, yes. Indeed. Thank you for the clarity. 13 lines from the bottom, four words before the end of the line. This was the second of that set of three. Amar Rav Nachman, he hashud al ha'arayot kashe le'edut. The statement is, if a person is hashud al ha'arayot, he's suspected of improprieties in sexuality, he's still kosher for testimony. The assumption is, although he might not be acting properly in financial matters and other issues, he's not necessarily or hopefully not going to go after his lust and desires. He's going to act honestly and in a genuine fashion. What specifically does it mean? Hashud al ha'arayot. We mentioned there are two opinions in Tosafot. It's either that there was just a shimua, just a rumor out on you. That was the first interpretation of Tosafot. Or alternatively, Tosafot explained, although there are actually witnesses on wrongdoings, we assume that the temptation in arayot, in sexuality, is stronger than in any other sphere, which means to say, although we'll invalidate you because you went after lustful desire and eating the wrong thing, we'll see it in just a bit in the Gemara, or you did it in terms of other issues that we've discussed and will discuss, when it comes to arayot, this is something which is beyond the realm of rational judgment. And we can't judge you based on that. Okay, regardless, that's the first answer to you, Abi. Yes, you're kasher le'idut. Says the Gemara, let's just qualify that. First, Rav Sheshat screams, Amar Rav Sheshat, ane mare, or mori. This is my master. You got to answer me on this. Rav Nachman, I can't believe you just said that. You really just koshered a guy who's hashud al harayot? Arba'in bekatveh vekasher? Question mark. You're telling me he has 40 lashes on his shoulders. And he's kosher for testimony. What's with the 40 lashes? Again, as we mentioned, although there are 39, the Torah says Arba'im Yakenu. But the Gemara Masechet Makot and Daf Chaf Bet mentions that the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda is it's actually 40. Little known fact. We always say 39 lashes. Rabbi Yehuda reads it literally. Where does the 40th of those lashes go? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it goes in between your shoulders. So that's the expression, in between your shoulders, the 40th lash. It's just an expression. It's expression more than anything. We're going to give this guy Malkot. You're telling me really he could testify?
I understood that. When really it's 39 lashes.
Yeah.
We call it 40.
Yeah.
Why?
The Torah calls it 40. The Torah says, Arba'im
Yakenu. Why do we only give him 39?
Well, first and foremost,
the Gemara.
Okay, but the Gemara makes derashot for it. The Gemara makes derashot like just like anything else. So you'll ask me, so then why does it say 40? We rounded the number up in the Torah, and then the Chachamim made a derashat to say, don't read it as a literal thing. Understand it as being rounded up. They have derashot. But there is the expression, the Gemara in Makot. You have to know them. Your circles, they don't quote this Gemara. But this Gemara, the Gemara in Masechet Makot says the following. Says, can you, maybe they do. And the Gemara says, can you imagine how much respect you have for the rabbis? That's the statement. That's the statement. It says, the Torah says 40, and they told you 39? And you stand up for a Sefer Torah, and you don't stand up for the rabbis? That's the statement in the Gemara. Again, don't take that too literally, because then it means they're describing something other than the actual intent in the Torah. What it means to say in the traditional sense is they're exposing tradition which your eyes, my eyes, wouldn't have caught. So we have to respect them for that tradition which they are bearers of. Anyway, for our purposes, we're getting too far off the page. The Gemara says, Rav Sheshat turns to Rav Nachman and says, I don't know what you're talking about. This guy's a rotten guy. Look how we're treating him. And you're going to tell me that we believe him in testimony? All right, the answer is yes. Amar Rava. Rava says, but you should know, Rav Nachman doesn't kosher in all circumstances. He'll kosher in financial monetary disputes. He's not going to kosher in context of marital issues. If there's a marital issue, this guy who's suspected on improprieties in sexuality, this is when it comes to testifying about a woman, about her marriage, he's pasul. Why is he pasul? Maybe he's looking at her, he's interested in her, and that's why he's testifying. Let's further qualify that statement. Again, you told me Rav Nachman koshers a person who's hashud al harayot for testimony. Says Rav Abba, but not for all testimony, not for marital testimony, not for women testimony. Says the next statement, wait a second, says Rav Papa, I want you to know, it's only specific marital testimony, women testimony stuff. Like what? La amaran ila la apuka, aval la ayula litlanba. It's only if it's in the context of getting her away from her husband. You're testifying that he gave a get. You're testifying that he died. You're testifying that this marriage is problematic in some way or fashion. You have your eyes on her. But if it's in order to get her into a marriage, I'm testifying about a good marriage, about the kiddushin, whatever the circumstances, of course you're kosher. You're bringing her away from you. So it means even in the edut isha, you'd be kosher. So I was like, pishita. I mean, come on. You needed to clarify that. We understand the Gemara elaborated, give us lots of details. This detail's necessary. We're dealing with a guy who's suspected. He's suspected, and you know, he's suspected for getting people together with one another. Well, of course he's not suspected. His suspicion is that he's going to take the woman for himself. Not that he's going to take her away from him. Says the Gemara, Mahu Ditema, what would you maybe have said to the extent that this guy, and we are lustful for women and sex, it's better in our eyes, in his eyes, Ha'adifal, it would be better that she be married than not. Why so? Dichtiv, as the pasuk says in Mishle, Mayim ginuvim yimtaku velechem sitarim yin'am. It's always sweeter when it's the forbidden bread. It's always more pleasant when it's the water that's stolen. In other words, maybe he'd want her to be married, and that's why he's testifying. Because now it's a sacred a sin in this context. No, it's not so. Alternatively, so no, that's not the way it works. The way our lust and desires unfortunately work. Okay, we'd rather not do it in that far of a sinful state because she's less accessible. You have to get her when her husband's away. You'd rather her be more easy for you to be to approach and to have relations with. And as a result, if it's le'apuka, if it's to take away from her husband, then you're not believed. If you're hashud al areot, if it's la'ayula, if it's in order to get her involved in this marriage, testify about the rightfulness of this marriage, you actually are believed. Okay, that's the second of the three circumstances. Ve'amar Rav Nachman. The next one, yes, Stanley.
On the 40 lashes, he suspected. How could they give him this?
They give him Tosafot. Well, two things. Either there was actually witnesses, second interpretation.
So then he's not suspected.
It's still suspected. We don't have full evidence of what went on. We have witnesses on something.
Stand it.
Either there's witnesses on something. We don't have the Lashon of the Gemara in several places. Ki makhol bishvoferet. We don't actually, makhol bishvoferet is a description of eyelash. If you ever look at a woman's eyelash, look unfortunately with a dirty mind and look what it looks like. It looks like the act of sex. In other words, it's something that goes into something else. So we don't have witnesses on that. So we don't have a full-fledged win, but we have. They secluded themselves in some place together. Yes, we give lashes for that. That's not so crazy. Alternatively, it's even on a rumor. Tosafot quotes from the Gemara in Masechet Kiddushin. If you see, well, you know, the Tosafot quotes from the Gemara Masechet Kiddushin. I said yesterday, Daf Pe Bet. I see now it's Daf Pe Aleph. Malkin alo toba hashimua. If you have a bad rumor going around about you, we as the rabbis, or they as the rabbis, will give you lashes. We don't like these rumors. These rumors are not born out of nothing. We assume they do their research that the rumor is not by your hater, but if there's a bad rumor, if there's bad word about you, rabbinically, we're giving you lashes in order to set things straight. I don't know that we're giving you 40, by the way. Well, it's an expression. The expression is 40. But where, you know, once upon a time it was a little bit more, certainly in the Eastern European communities, until late. If I'm not mistaken, I heard from people told me even in the latest generations, even in the Middle East, they were giving lashes. You gave lashes. Crazy thought. In the Eastern Europe, I've been in the synagogues I went to when I was studying in Israel for the year. So Pesach time, I went on a trip. It's called Heritage. So you go to the concentration camps and you see some of the old synagogues in Eastern Europe. They had in one or two of them, they still had an area where you would go and you gave lashes. The Gabbai Bet HaKineset gave you lashes. Can you imagine? I mean, Shulchan Aruch talks about it. It talks about it in pre-Yom Kippur. I just never knew we actually did that. You know, it's like one of those things. Anyway, it says the Gemara onward, Ve'amar Rav Nachman, Ganav Nisan V'ganav Tishrei, La Shemeh Ganav. The statement over here is if you're a Ganav, you're a thief, but you only do it in the month of Nisan or Tishrei. What do you mean only do it in the month of Nisan or Tishrei? What's that referring to? And if so, you're not a Ganav. So, I mean, watch your car, watch your possessions in Nisan and Tishrei, because the person, even if he's Jewish, can rob from you and he's kosher for Eidut. No, that's not what it means. What it means over here is you're dealing with a sharecropper. Sharecropper is what we refer to as an aris. I know in Arabic we refer to it as a person who's engaged. A sharecropper is for a similar reason. You're involved in something. Sharecropper means the following. I'm working on your field, and instead of being paid, I'm taking from the produce. So I get half of the produce, I get three quarters, I got a quarter, whatever it is, that's a sharecropper. Now, the circumstance is the following. I'm a sharecropper, I really only get what I was misakim with you. We had an agreement, I get half of the produce. However, I'm working the field, and we both know I'm going to be hungry a little bit. I'm working this anyway. I'm going to take some snacks, I'm going to take some food. That's Ganav Nisan and Ganav Tishrei. What's Nisan and Tishrei? Nisan is the month of harvesting. Tishrei is the month of gathering. Hag HaAsif, Hag HaKasir, right? We're familiar with these, whatever. That's what you're dealing with. So it's an expression of the time when you'd be working in the field in the major production times. You're a sharecropper. Now, Rashi says you're still taking wrongfully. You're an Aris. You're not allowed to be doing this. But you say, you know something, we get along well. He'd be mohail on this. You know, it's the liberties we take all the time.
What's that? The field understands that he's going to take snacks.
Says the Gemara. I understand. Says the Gemara, according to Rashi, you're still a Ganav. He wasn't mohail, but you thought he was mohail, so you're not a bad guy. We'll accept you as testimony. You weren't taking lustfully. You're not a Rasha' de Hamas. You're not an actual thief. Did you steal? You stole, but we'll accept you in court. Why? Because you have good rationale. Says Harambam, no, you didn't actually steal. There is a norm. The guy was mohel. Why are we calling you a ganav over here? Because that's the way we're talking about. You took something that's technically speaking wasn't yours. Okay, but we got the circumstance. You're a sharecropper in the field. It's during the major production times, Nisan Tishrei, the gathering or the cutting time, and you shouldn't be taking this. It's not part of your agreement. But I mean, anyway, that's how I'm getting paid. So you eat from that as well. Says the Gemara again, Ganav Nisan, Ganav Tishrei, La Shemeh Ganav. You're not considered a Ganav to be invalidated for Edut. Hanemile, but you should understand, we'll qualify this, Be'arisa. It's specifically when you're an Aris, when you're a sharecropper. V'davar Mu'at. And it's not a large quantity. As if you're hoarding things, bring it back for your storehouse, Gemebrek. You knew the guy wasn't mohel. Don't play this game. You don't think you're a po'el. Ubedavar, small quantity.
From your share or
no, if it's from your share, you're not stealing. Again, it's from the other. So it's skimming off the top, right? And assuming it's... I mean, come on, is this not real? Is this not? No, I'm saying, is this? I'm not, Jared, I'm not justifying. I'm saying, if that's don't know, what are we? I'm saying, does this not happen everywhere? I was in a bookstore, of warehouse, right, 2 days ago, and the fellow had just got in, fantastic, the Sefer HaYashar on Chilek Teshubot, and he had it on his desk. So I said, so he's going to give it to me. He didn't know the price. He didn't know how much he bought it for yet. So, I mean, I hold this guy to be a very pious guy after he rips me off on all the books all the time. But I hold him now with a higher respect than ever. He says, no, I don't want to sell it to you. I said, why not? He said, I don't know how much I bought these for. So I said, so call Fada. So he called and they didn't have the number, whatever. So he says, listen, can we come up with a number? You'll be mohel, I'll be mohel. We actually did it out like that. We did a formal mehila. I think I came out better. I mean, it's an amazing thing. But anyway, but what I'm saying is this is a norm and, you know,
Day in and day out.
I'm not justifying it. Jared's like, wow, it's terrible. It might be terrible.
I had factories, people would take socks and pantyhose and hosiery home to their wives and husbands all day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Back on my access to business. A different bookstore, right? Different bookstore. I remember him once telling me, I found a book on a bookshelf, didn't belong in the store. It was just a different type. I said, what's this doing here? It's out of place. Let me tell you how it works. People come in and they justify. I want that book. I'll bring one of my books. I'll put it on the shelf and I'll walk out with that one. I said, well, you let that, he says, I don't let it happen, but it happens. They're mohel in their mind. Of course, the store owner's okay with it, whatever. So yeah, I mean, it happens everywhere, even in Jewish bookstores is the point. Anyway, okay, it's not mutar, but according to Rashi in this context, but it's yena pasule edut. We actually believe that you did this with the right intention. Ubedavar shenigmera melachto, and there's a further qualification. You're dealing with crops in which you finished the production. In other words, you're not dealing with initial stages. You actually justify to yourself, I did the production over here, so you'd be okay if I took a little snack here and there. Okay, says the Gemara, you should know, however, this is only, as we said a moment ago, in sharecrops. What if you're paid for the job? What we call an ikar, a classic farmer. I'm working for you, but I'm paid for the job. I'm not paid with the crops. Ikare de Rav Zavid. Rav Zavid, one of the Emoraim, had a field and he had workers. He had an ikar. Had one of his ikarim, one of his farmers, ganav kavad de sa'are. He stole a measurement known as a kav of barley. Okay, kosher for testimony or not? Certainly not. Upasle. He's pasul. You're not a sharecropper. I'm not assuming that you thought I would be mohel. You're paid by the job. You're not paid with the crops. V'had ganav, a different one of his sharecroppers, ganav kibura de ahine. Says Rashi, a cluster of grapes? Mine says dates. Rashi says temarim, dates. Right? So a cluster of dates. Same idea. Upasle, and Rav Zavid is posil him as well. That's right. That's right. You can't assume, but the Gemara wants to make that distinction for you. You can't, should not assume the guy justified it in his mind. Again, wrongful justification, according to Rashi, but you had the right intention. When we take you for testimony, we think you're a truthful person. Hanahu kabora'e de kabur nafsha biyom tov rishon shel aseret. There were gravediggers, Jewish ones, kabora'e milashon likbor, to bury, who buried on the first day of Shavuot. Pause for a second. First and foremost, I don't know. Truth is, we could ask Daniel Sultan. I don't know if, maybe they do in some way or another, if Hevra Kadisha, generally speaking, today get paid for their job. Maybe the gravediggers, but the gravediggers are no longer Jews, you know, in our cemeteries. But anyways, they were paid. So that's important to know. In other words, their action over here that we're going to describe is with money. You know, so if it wasn't with money, we're not going to be able to really talk in the context of testimony. They violated something, but if it wasn't financially inspired, we're not so certain that this would enter into the conversation. As we've discussed, this will come up very soon. Ravana Baye might need to be a financial issue in order to invalidate you for all testimony. Okay, so first and foremost, you have to understand the grave diggers were paid money. Secondly, they violated. What they violate? They dug a grave on the first day of Shavuot. Who cares the first day or second day? The Gemara in Masechet Beitza and Vav makes clear that the first day of Yom Tov, although it's a mitzvah to bury a niftar, you do it al yedei nochrim. You need to do it by non-Jews. You're not allowed to do it. It's milacha. It's asur on Yom Tov. It's not sorech Yom Tov. As a result, you're not allowed to do so. Second day of Yom Tov, and this is important, you do it afilu al yedei Yisrael. Jews are supposed to do the burial on the second day, mishum kibod hamit. Second day of Yom Tov, minhag avotenu biyadenu. That's where the Gemara says in the Masechet Beitza and Daf Vav. Since it's only a minhag, which we've accepted and is binding and will be binding, but there are leniencies. The leniencies in this context is we bury our people, the Jewish people, do the burial. So here's the grave diggers being paid.
Bury the first day.
What's
we,
that?
Do we bury the first day?
I'm not talking about practically speaking.
We do the second day.
We don't bury the first day.
That's right. I'm telling you what the Gemara says. There's tremendous debate about that matter. Longer conversation with a few interesting stories as well. But let's learn Betza and we'll discuss it. Anyway, says the Gemara over here. Here were the individuals they buried on the first day. Now, in their mind, it will become clear. They certainly want the profit, but they also think they're doing the right thing. We're burying a dead person. I mean, they are doing the right thing, but it's the wrong thing. You're burying. It's a nice thing to do.
I mean,
it's met, kind of, you know, it's chesed shel emet. Met mitzvah, we generally say there's no one else to bury. Okay, you had non-Jews to bury. In their mind, they're doing the right thing. They do want the money for it, but they're doing it in the wrong time. It's wrong. Shamtinu Rav Papa upaslinu le'edut. Rav Papa not only invalidates them, he excommunicates them. We understand why. Excommunication, the Harambam mentions from Masechet Moed Katan, 24 circumstances of excommunication that used to be utilized. Harambam writes in Hilchot Talmud Torah, but what's the common denominator, generally speaking? In my mind, these are dangerous in-between type of actions. It's an action which I mean, as an outsider, I don't understand the significance. It looks like a petty small thing, but within the system, it's the small things, if they're done in your face and laughing at it in some way or another, that threatens the whole system. Rabbi Eliezer, the Gemara on Masechet Bava Metzia and Daf Nuntet tells us, Rabbi Eliezer went against the majority in the famous Tanur Shel Achnai episode, right? He goes against the majority ruling on a specific petty law of Tuma and Tahara, and he proves his ruling from the heavens. He has a bat kol emanate from the heavens and say, Halakha kirbi li'ezer bechol makom. And what's the reaction of the rabbis? Rabbi Akiva goes at the behest of the rabbis and excommunicates. Excommunicate? Tell him he's wrong. We go by the base of the majority rule. Lo bashamay, we don't listen to the heavens. Excommunicate? No. That's a significant episode. If he didn't get excommunicated, we'd have people walking in and conjuring up miracles constantly and saying, Halakha is like me, and having things change, shift, and nature. That's it. Sounds small. Sounds like a specific small mistake, petty item. Very significant. Shamtinu, you need a bimet
shamtinu. What are they, Oved? These are Jewish?
These are Jewish guys. There's a whole lot of averot. You certainly have a whole lot of averot. There's many mukse issues. You're digging as a melechet hafira in that context. There might be carrying. I understand. Only if it needs to be done in that moment. Over here, you can push it off to the next day. You're saying, it's not met mitzvah. And even if it's met mitzvah, you do it the next day. It's kabod hamet. At most, kabod hamet is not dohe. Kabod hamet is important, not dohe. We need to learn besa next, right? So that's Gemara. Ve'achshirinu Rav Huna bered Rav Yehoshua. Rav Huna koshers. Why does he kosher? Amar le Rav Papa v'harasha'im ninu. Turns Rav Papa and says, but they're wicked people. And adds Rashi, not only did they go against the law, they did it for profit, which again is significant. Savre responds, it sounds like, Rav Huna, misva ka'avde. They thought, although we're making profit, they thought they're doing the right thing. Veha kamishamtina lehu. Savre misva ka'avde veha kamishamtina lehu. They thought they were doing a mitzvah, and you're excommunicating them. Savre kapara ka'avdelan rabbanan. In other words, it goes like this. Rav Huna turns and says they thought they were doing a mitzvah. Says Rav Papa back to him, but they knew they were going to get excommunicated. Says Rashid, they've been excommunicated for doing this in the past. Maybe you want to just close the door. They've been excommunicated for this in the past. They should have known better. Responds Rav Huna, you know what they thought? They thought that the excommunication was bringing them kapara. They thought this was all part of the game. They in the past had buried on Yom Tov. They were excommunicated. Says Rav Papa, they knew this was the wrong thing to do. Don't tell me they thought mitzvah. Says Rav Huna, no, they thought the rabbis had this game with us. We do the wrong thing, but it's really the right thing. The rabbis excommunicate us. We get absolved of our sin. We did the right thing, and then we do it again. So that's what Rav Papa says to him. That's the back and forth with Rav Papa and Rav Huna. No, you can make it back. There's ways of doing Tisha B'Av from excommunication. We learned this in Mo'ed Katan, 100%. Yeah. Says the Gemara onward, Itmar. Okay, Itmar is a statement in the Midrash. It's the following new circumstance. Ed Zomim. Now, Ed Zomim, very briefly, the Gemara Masechet Makot at the beginning talks about what an Ed Zomim is. We've discussed it very briefly here as well. It's a very basic circumstance, but, you know, somewhat detailed. It's in Sefer Devarim. The Torah talks about Ve'asitim lo kasher zamam la'asot le'achiv. That's the punishment. What's the circumstance? There are two regular witnesses who testify about something. They testify that someone killed a person. Okay. Two other witnesses walk into court at some point during the deliberations and claim, you couldn't have seen that murder because on that day you were with us in another place. They don't dispute the facts. They don't deal with the facts. They dispute the existence of those people in that place. They talk about the people. That's what's in Ed Zomim. That's our circumstance. Now, here's the question. Lemafreahu nifsal or mikanu lahabau nifsal? The word lemafreah means retroactively. Mikanu lahabau means going forward, proactively. What's the question? The question goes as follows. A person, these two witnesses over here, are found to be Eid Zomim. They testified in Nisan. They testified 2 days ago. Testified, that's how Rashi writes it. 2 days ago in Nisan. We only find Erev Kippur in Tishrei that they're Eidim Zomimim. In the interim, they signed off on all sorts of shtarot, on all sorts of documents. They testified about a whole lot of other things. Do we retroactively turn back and say, wait a second, those witnesses, they were wrongful witnesses. We know that in Nisan, they testified they were false witnesses. They were Eidim Zomim. Everything they testified in the middle, rip up all those documents, give up all the things.
6 months later, to state that the first set of witnesses were with us at that time.
Correct. What happens to all the cases that those two initial witnesses involved themselves in during that 6 month period?
What is done?
We don't know. Says the Gemara Abaye.
What if these second set of witnesses come and say the first witnesses they gen levi? Not that they're in place.
You learned the Gemara onward?
Right, so they can't.
I don't know yet. I don't know yet. Right now, I only know Eid Zomim. You're ahead of me. The Gemara will deal with that, all right? Clearly, we're talking about Eid Zomim. We're not talking about Gazlanim. We'll have to figure that one out as well, okay? Hang tight. Very soon. Says the Gemara, Abaye Amar Lemafre'ahu Nifsal. Abaye says, not like Jesse said, not what happened. Abaye says, turn back the clock. Redo everything. Undo everything. Rava Amar Mikanu Lehabahu Nifsal. Rava says, what happened. Let's look forward. We can't do anything more.
There's kiddushim according to Abaye.
And children afterwards, yeah. And things like, yeah, that. Whatever. Important question. Important that Rishonim actually debate that. We're going to deal.
Status quo.
What's
not
that?
They're not mamzerim.
Why? They're not good witnesses. Okay.
If you have kiddushim ta'ud, the children remain status.
He's asking. Let's rephrase it. He's asking if they were edim on a gitin, all right? They were edim on a gitin, and then they had relation. Okay, there are messy circumstances. All need to and should be addressed separately. We're going to deal with it just in the financial realm. For our purposes, it's the most simple. Says the Gemara over here, Abaye Amar lemafre' hu nifsal me'idna. Me'idna means from the time. The asid that they testified, or he testified, rasha'hu, is immediately rasha. What do you mean he's a rasha? We haven't established him as a rasha, but he is a rasha. Why is he a rasha? Because he testified falsely. But we haven't established it. Doesn't matter. We now figured it out retroactively. V'atora amra al tashet yadecha im rasha, v'derasha liyot ed hamas al tashet rasha ed. Right? The pasuk literally says, don't come together with a bad guy to testify. The derasha is, as judges, we are in charge of making sure that we don't put wicked people as witnesses, says Abaye.
Beit Din made the judgment.
What's
final
that?
Final judgment. Beit Din made the final
judgment. That's what we're
talking
about. And now,
6 months later, you want to avoid
out. Rip it up.
Rip up the judgment.
Rip up the judgment.
Reverse.
It's the halakha. We follow Abaye, ironically, over here, right? That's Abaye's opinion. Abaye says,
the
mafreya unifsal.
That's the way it should be, though. How can it be any other way?
It gets very messy.
So the guy, when he started his testimony, that's the second the clock is ticking. Now, what's the difference when I say he's his own?
Right, so here's the question.
We're going to read
Rava's words, but I'm going to sharpen them even before we read them. The question is, we are dealing with a court system. We're dealing with Masha Inenu Royim. We're dealing with what we see. What if, in reality, not in your marriage, in my marriage, I'm okay, they were very pious rabbis, the witnesses were invalid. Nobody ever discovered it. Does it mean la'achar me'ave esrim of my children in some way or fashion? Okay, on a gitin, whatever. I mean, make it the case. Those children are mamzerim and we're dealing with all sorts? No, certainly not. We deal with court cases and judgments based on what we see, and that is binding as emet. That's the Torah's ruling. So the counter argument, he'll say it in different words to you, Jared, is, yeah, listen, at that time they were in the heavenly decision-making, reshaim. But the heavenly decision-making is to a certain extent given over to us. We didn't establish that yet. We didn't discover that yet. You're going to turn back the clock? When we made that decision, that's going forward. I hear you. It's a hard sell, but that's...
Doesn't it say, don't we try to follow, emulate God's ways? I mean, isn't that the thing with Yerovam ben Nebat? He gave the Malchut to Yerovam ben Nebat. Why? Because in that moment, he was a tzaddik, even though he destroyed the nation. Isn't that the same thing with Yishmael? He saved Yishmael by Asher Rusham at that moment.
And Ben Soreru Moreh?
Yeah. But what?
Ben Soreru Moreh.
What's that?
The Torah says, it's a perek in our masechet. If a kid is acting wrongfully, he's lustfully drinking wine or meat, you kill him. Why? Nidon al Shem Sofo. Because we assume in the future he's going to be a bad guy. He's not a bad guy now.
But he is. He's doing those acts now. But
you don't get killed for it. I mean, you know, I had good wine last night. Don't kill me now, please. Right? No, it's because... Okay, that's the ultimate debate.
But that's what I'm... But that...
What I'm telling you is, it's not so simple. It's not so simple to ever go just. And it says the Gemara onward. Rava amar mikanu lahabahu nifsal. Rava disagrees. Rava says mikanu lahabahu nifsal. What's done is done. Let's look forward. Why so? Ed zomem hidushu. The concept of ed zomem is a hidush. Now, it's a hidush means it's a novelty. It's not something you would have expected. Why would you not have expected this? May hazit de samachta ahane, simoch ahane. In the Chaboy Ela Mishaat Hidushova Ilach, the statement of Rava goes like this. It says, listen, this is a novelty. Why are you believing that second set of witnesses over the first set of witnesses? There's one of two ways in terms of determining what the Gemara means. Why are you believing the second ones to punish the first ones? Why are we accepting their word over the first ones? Alternatively, why aren't you invalidating, says Tosafot, both set of witnesses? When you have a standstill, you say X, I say Y, and I'm not going at you, I'm just saying something different. We throw it out in the court of law. We say it's Ideh HaKhasham, we throw it out. This is an interesting concept. The Torah says we listen to the second one, we don't listen to the first one. Hidushu. And as a result of it being a Hidush, says Rava, En Chabo Ela Mishat Hidusho Vailach. We need to think about it from going forward. When I tell you something that's unexpected and you don't know how to explain it, don't apply your logic to it. This is a circumstance which defies a regular logic. The Torah told me, treat him as an Edzomim, kill him, believe these over the other ones. From when? How? I just know from now. It's along the lines of what I was talking to Jared earlier. It's a little bit broader over here. I was making a little bit finer tune, but the idea is you're injecting logic into a circumstance which, to a certain extent, defies logic. By the way, parentheses, what is the logic? Why do we believe the second set? The Torah is mamash a hok. Hok velo ya'avo. That's what we believe, the second one, not the first one. Ramban Nachmani writes a jarring thing in his Perush al Torah. He says, we generally assume, the Gemara said it to us earlier in the Masechet, that God is present in circumstances of testimony and courts, right? Elokim nitzav, he's there. And as a result, says Ramban, if the second set came in and they checked out, we see this as a divine stamp on that. It's a fascinating thing. And that's to the extent that if the halakha is ve'asitim lo kasher zaman la'asod the lo kasher asad, the halakha, this is what Ramban is really talking about. Ramban says, if we already listened to that second set in court and we killed the first set, and then a third set comes and verifies the first one, knocks out the second one, what do? We don't know. We don't kill them. We don't kill the second set because we already killed the first set. That's right. But over here, you already killed. What do you mean you already killed them? You always listen to the second set. If God allowed for this, that's a very spiritual vision over here of the court. But that's the way you envision. Okay, says the Gemara. Ikad de'amre, this alternative. Okay, we're going to continue with this tomorrow. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen v'amen.